Hello, this is The Leg Show. We're going to get started in just a couple minutes here. In the meantime, if you have IRC access, be sure to join us at irc.thelinuxshow.com and channel Pound Linux Show. So hang in there. We'll get started right after these messages.
And we're back.
It's The Linux Show. It is 8 o'clock right on the button. Oh, almost 30 seconds off. We're actually starting on time for a change. This is a Tuesday night edition of The Linux Show for August the 5th, 2003. Only a short 4 hours from my birthday. So happy birthday to me for bringing you another edition of our weekly episode to the comings and goings of the Linux and open source community. And things are going to be a little bit different, probably. Well, different from the standpoint of where the show is coming to you from, but not different from the standpoint that, as usual, things will be chaos. We love chaos here. And but we do have a crew of people that have boarded airplanes, flown to California, and are presently at the Linux World Expo. And so they're going to be talking to us tonight. And the only person that we're missing right now is Arnie, and I'm presuming Arnie is going to join us shortly. If not, I'll give him a buzz and get him situated. But we do have most of the crew lined up to join us tonight, and we're going to be bringing them in very, very shortly. I know, Russ, you're out there right now. Russ?
Yeah, I'm here.
You're here?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's just a little stuff going on here in the background.
Yeah.
But I am surviving out here in San Francisco.
Are things a little disorganized there, or have you guys got everything well put together?
I think things are coming together here. Just getting a little logistics together. No big deal, but it is a. It's been an interesting show, and I'm sure it's going to be even more interesting as time goes on. I don't know where Doc is.
Well, that's probably Doc right there, or Arnie, one of the...
Actually, I believe that's our guest for segment two.
Oh, okay. But if we don't see Doc and Arnie in just a few minutes, I'll go ahead and try and hook them up during the course of the show. But we'll go ahead and start talking about some of our lists on our subject list tonight. And... I'm just going to sort of leave this open to you, Russ, because I know some of the topics that I've got lined up have got to be also some of the things that are buzzing around the floor. And we'll sort of save all the SCO news for last so that we can all concentrate it into one lump just before the break halfway through the show. But... Let's start it off this way. Overall, compared with the last couple of shows, what's Linux World Expo looking like?
Well, I think it's been kind of interesting. I did the show floor this morning, partially because I was one of the judges for all the best of awards that come out, and things seem to be pretty much hopping on the show floor. One thing that became really, really evident as the judges got back together to assess what they saw, was that there was a lot of incremental improvements, but there wasn't much of anything that I would consider a real showstopper. You know, something like when the SGI Altix hit last show, that was something that just seemed to catch a lot of people.
Open mail 2 years ago when it hit the show.
Yeah, there were a lot of sort of big things. What we seem to be seeing is more of a maturing process. There's a lot of things that are, you know, really good products out there, but they're not necessarily breaking into fresh new areas, but they're certainly making definite improvements on existing areas.
Well, yeah, I was talking to a couple of people from Brew yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
I should say Talus Group. I still call them Brew. But I was talking to them about the Brew product. But they're now on, for those of you who aren't aware of what Brew is a Unix / Linux / whatever. It comes in many flavors. Backup and recovery software that is on version 17.x. I'm really not sure which version, but they hit 17 as a full version number, oh, about 8-9 months ago.
Hey.
Arnie?
This is Doc.
Oh, hi, Doc.
Hi, guys.
That in itself was remarkable. What the people were at the Tuck and Do from Tola said, they said the same thing. They said that it's getting really difficult to impress people because how many times can you come up with something really revolutionary after, yeah, the Linux community is starting to mature. The products really are starting to mature, and it's hard to really pull off that showstopper.
Right. And that's what we seem to be seeing here. I mean, there's a lot of good products out there, but most of them aren't new, innovative, groundbreaking things. We did see some very interesting things. I got a chance to talk to some of the people at Stalker Software, do the Communicate Pro product, and that's basically a drop-in exchange replacement. And that seemed to be getting a lot of traction on the show floor.
That's a commercial product.
Yeah, that's a commercial product. That's, of course, the other thing for folks who are unaware. You know, for the last couple of years, Linux World has hardly been the expo for geeks to hang out. It is definitely a business show, and this year has not been anything different in that regard. Very heavy business emphasis going on. Overall, that's a good thing.
Yep.
So, Zach,
what's your general impression?
I don't know what you guys have said so far. It's a smaller show. It's a quieter show. It's not a very geeky show. And it's a kind of a devoid of news as well. You know, I mean, there's the usual SCO stuff, but that happens every day anyway. And the most interesting thing to me was the Zimian story, the Novell Zimian story. But even there, I mean, if you go to the Novell site right now, Zimian's not even on the front of it. Okay, there are like three other, you know, Linux-related stories, and Zimian's not even mentioned. I think maybe it's because it's scrolled off. I'm really not sure. They just, you know, roll out one press release after another, kind of burying their own story in the process with an automated process. Russ, were you at the press conference, the Zimian press conference?
I didn't have a chance to. I was on the Ford Product Awards.
Yeah, I just finished writing a piece about it. I thought Nat Friedman, who's the, one of the founders of Miguel Diakaza of Zimian, did a really good job of, you know, explaining what the fit was between Zimian and Novell. But the net effect to me was that it made Novell legitimate as a Linux company. But, you know, at this point, you know, any large software company has to be a Linux company. So, I mean, that's really a pretty clear thing. If you're not Microsoft and you're a big software company, you've got to be a Linux company. Because
this is a real step forward into the market, though.
This is
without question a direct challenge to both SUSE and Red Hat for a real position play. There's just no question about that. It is very smart of Novell.
I agree.
Them a lot of credibility.
Hold on a second. Trying to get out. I'm in our suite, and it's just a big crowd in here. I'm going to try and move just over to where there might be some other windows or something.
You mean the Linux Journal is being hospitable?
Hmm?
How about that?
Can you guys still hear me?
Oh, sure.
Oh, shit. Did I lose you?
No, you didn't.
Oh, man, this sucks.
Well, we can hear you.
Oh.
Doc, can you hear us? I don't think Doc can turn.
I think Doc's going to have to try somewhere else.
Yeah, no, yeah, I'm walking around the halls of a hotel.
Go back in the room, Doc. You get better reception in the room.
Yeah, well, no, the thing is that by one window, now I'm at another window, and I'm at the end of a hall. It moved to Rome, and every time this phone goes to Rome from AT&T, it drops the call.
Joyful.
That's sort of weird. Huh. Well, let's go ahead and get on to the news. While talking on the news, I'll see if I can reach Arnie. But first of all, let's start with you, Russ. Who did win the awards?
Well, unfortunately, I don't have the full list here in front of me because we did different ones. But Stalker Software, as I said, won their particular department. Unfortunately, I don't have the darn thing here in front of me, which is great. But I think the best of show ended up going to Oracle 9i, if I remember. And that was actually, I will say, a pretty tough decision by most of the judges because we were hoping to find that breakout something or other somewhere. And there wasn't one. So there was a great deal of discussion and debate. I believe IBM walked away with a couple seats, and some of the smaller companies as well got some awards this time around. Unfortunately, I just don't have the list. I had to miss that press conference because I was giving my own talk at that time, so I never got a final sheet on that. It has been there's some interesting products out there. As I was,
I'm sorry, there's no answer.
Trying to raise Arnie up. There have been some announcements, including, I think the other major surprise besides Novell Zimian has been the, there was a BOF today, Bird of the Feather session, and I didn't get a chance to attend because it's my own schedule, but the Open Source and Industry Alliance, www.osaia.org, they are... something that listeners are interested in. They are trying to speak out in Washington, pro-open source, and a lot of that sort of stuff through our local groups, and Bruce Perrin has done some and whatnot, and now this is getting a lot of support from all sorts of people here. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens with this group, but... that is apparently now on the move. So.
Well, yeah, we'll see. This, Bruce Perrin contacted me about this group over the weekend, and for better or for worse, some people within the hierarchy of the Linux community are probably not going to get involved because Bruce is in the leadership of this group. But certainly hope for the best.
Well, the interesting thing here is, at least by the announcement, I don't see Bruce in a leadership capacity. He is simply one of many. Now,
yes.
Whether or not that plays out that way, I have no idea. But it mentions that MySQL's Martin Mikos, Sleepy Cat's Mike Olson, Oracle's Larry Ellison, Novell's Jack Messman,
yes.
Tim O'Reilly, Tony Stanko, and... Chris DeBona and a few others are apparently all signing on to this.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to do the job. Well, I'm certainly hoping for the best. Those are some very interesting names. Let's hope that they can actually get the money to do the things that they were talking about doing. Bruce was telling me over the weekend that they've already started interviewing to hire lobbyists, and what they're looking to do is hire a staff of 6 lobbyists and a couple of office personnel. That's some heavy-duty salaries. That's, to hire 6 lobbyists and office staff, you're probably looking at about $1 million a year budget. And in D.C. I mean, you cannot get a decent lobbyist for under $100,000 a year. And but I hope that they can actually put this together and get it funded, because it's certainly needed. Speaking of Bruce, did you happen to have a chance to catch his keynote?
No, I did not, because of my schedule. Actually, his thing's tomorrow, I think.
Oh, is it? For some reason, I thought it was today.
No, I think it's tomorrow. I may be mistaken on that. My day was pretty much filled up with between the judging and my own session. So I didn't get a chance to hear anyone speak today except me, for what it's worth. There were a couple other things that I found interesting among the press releases this time around. Pogo Linux and MySQL have come out with a database appliance, which is kind of cool. It's taking another page out of normal tactics, but with open source. So that could be interesting. That could be something to watch. I should note that I mentioned that the best product show got a lot of debate. Right after we all took off from there, I ran across my personal favorite best product of show, and that is there was some guys walking around selling black T-shirts with white letters saying SCO on them with the metric red circle and slash through it. So these no-sco T-shirts were out there and drawing some attention. I'm sure that it was against all sorts of show policy, et cetera, et cetera. But they got a lot of sympathizers, that's for sure.
Now, were these people just walking through, or were they actually passing them out from booths?
No, these guys were selling them at $20 a pop walking through the show floor.
They were selling them by walking up and down the aisles.
Yeah, which I'm sure is a...
That's against the rules, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it was quite the laugh, though.
I'm sorry, there's no answer.
That's Darnie again.
Yeah. Let me see. Also, coming up, I think it's tomorrow, there is supposed to be some people from the TV Linux Alliance, and I guess the CEO of MetroWorks is going to be talking about Linux in digital television and trying to increase the adoption rate there and so forth and all the things that they want to do, it's a neat topic for sure. It'll be interesting to find out where that effort goes over time.
Yeah, very interesting. A couple other stories I'll throw out that, again, these may have been talked about at the show, and so feel free to jump in there and comment. But the first is a couple of big items that came out about IBM, and I'm sure we can bring these back in during the second half of the show and get Dan's comments on them as well. But a big serious press release came out yesterday and today of first that IBM was planning to release the world's most powerful Linux supercomputer, and that was one of the big buzzes yesterday. In the pre-show press releases, and then immediately upon the heels of that press release was an announcement by Fujitsu that they have plans to actually beat IBM's plan in terms of making a faster, more powerful supercomputer. So with that and a couple of other ancillary stories, one being, of course, that SGI has just had some life breathed back into them, and there is talk of If you go to the quote-unquote mainstream media websites, there's talk of Cray even making a rebound. It looks like last year was, we should probably say the last 2 years were the year of the mainframe. And although we've been talking desktop, it looks like right now supercomputers appear to be making a huge resurgence during the course of the last few months. And was there, there's four stories, all within a matter of a week. Was there much buzz on the floor of the expo about all this supercomputer news popping up?
Well, it's kind of interesting. Actually, I like the details on what you heard about SGI, because being traveling as much as I've been, unfortunately, I haven't tapped into everything. But one of the things I did hear, though, was that SGI apparently does not have a booth, and I haven't verified that, but someone said that they were they may have had some presence at someone else's booth. But in a stark contrast with their big Altix box last time around, apparently, they are very minimal at the moment at this show.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting reorganized. Mad Dog's working at SGI now.
Mm-hmm.
And so Linux is definitely in their supercomputing plans. There's no question about that.
Yeah, there were several products that I ran across, I think, that had to do with, clusters and blades that I saw up in the show upstairs. That's certainly, hot topic as far as all that goes. I didn't hear anything at all about Cray or anything of that nature.
Yeah, well, even the Cray is big buzzed on Wall Street this week.
Hmm.
In terms of Cray was always the go-to company for people like the IRS, the Weather Bureau, things like that. And the last time the IRS and the Weather Bureau made serious purchases several years ago, and they're up to the point now where they're going to be reinvesting in technology, and they've already got an enormous amount of legacy put into developing applications for Cray. And so this is going to be a potential opportunity to create a whole new Cray, breathe life into a dead horse. I tell you, I've lost more money on Cray over the years. every time that guy opens a company, I put money into it, and after about 6 years, I've lost it all. But boy, for those 6 years, what a ride!
God, you sound like you just visited Las Vegas there, Jeff.
Yeah, well, with Cray, it's been that way. It's been that way. It really is sort of funny.
Hmm.
I suppose it's time. Kevin, do you want to jump in here with any new product releases, or do you just want to leave it all for Russ, because he's right there with all the new product releases?
Yeah, just to touch on briefly, one thing we missed a few weeks ago now is that Mozilla Data Foundation has officially been cut loose from AOL and is now an independent organization. And they do have releases of their now separate browser and mail clients available in alpha release that you might want to check out.
I thought we did talk about that.
Did we?
I don't know. I'll have to check my notes. But I thought we talked about that.
I don't think we talked about it in any great detail, that's for sure.
Yeah. But I just wanted to mention that anyway.
So when are we going to come out with a Linux Shell browser, Kevin?
Good question. Well, probably when the staff grows significantly.
We toyed with the idea of our own distribution for a while and decided that was a really stupid idea.
Yeah, we have enough work.
Yeah, we have enough to do. We lost enough money this week already. Thank you very much. But I suppose it's time. Let's start talking about our favorite subject in the universe, and that's Go.
Mm.
Interesting week. and I'm sure this was obviously on everybody's mind at the expo. Well, first of all, it's obvious SCO didn't show up to the expo. They have no presence there. But it would have been interesting had they been there. That's for damn sure. Especially with people even being so crass as to sell T-shirts in the house. A couple of specific topics, and again, go ahead and jump in, Russ, on the buzz from the floor. But I think the first obvious thread is something that has been popping up in a number of panels at the expo and several press conferences, and that is something that we talked about in detail over the course of the last couple weeks, and that is that a lot of this is much ado about nothing because of the fact that the offending code that SCO claims, be it there or not. Hi, Doc.
Hey, are we back?
You're back.
Oh, man. Hey, guys. Yeah.
But we're talking about SCO right now.
You're on SCO right now?
Yeah, we just started SCO. Just this minute. The first topic we're talking about SCO is the fact that there's been a whole bunch of panels and speakers who have been talking last day and a half at Linux World Expo, following the same theme of the things that we've been discussing here the last several weeks, and that is that in terms of the offending code itself, this really is a much ado about nothing story in terms of once the truth is told on any existing offending code, you know, if it exists. It's much ado about nothing because the estimates are that it would take no more than 48 hours to write the code out. People within some of the analyst groups that aren't necessarily very favorable to Linux and the open source communities are now agreeing that it really does look like the whole issue is just a simple rewrite away, and this is going to all become the shot that wasn't heard around the world. You know, it's just going to sort of sustain as an echo in the hollow halls of SCO's Utah headquarters, but that's about it. It's fairly evident that the fact that we've got whatever it is, 10,000 rabid kernel hackers, that it's really not going to take more than a day or two to fix any offending code. And again, that's even if it does actually exist. So what were people saying on that thread on the floor? Russ, Doc, no. Either one of you?
I don't know if Doc's still out there. The interesting thing, inside the conversations I had, the topic of SCO barely came up. People are too busy here trying to deal with the realities of doing stuff with Linux, and quite frankly, I get the real sense that for most people, it's pretty much off the radar. You know, it's kind of like discussing a ball game that happened last night. It's like, yeah, it makes for a little idle chatter, and then you get on with work. And for a lot of the people I've been dealing with, and my talk, I took questions for like a good half hour, and I don't think there was a single reference to SCO. It just doesn't seem to be on people's minds for the most part. It's like watching the sideshow freak show. You know, it's good for a gawk, then you get on with life.
That's interesting because Larry Augustin said in his panel about the last 20 minutes, 25 minutes of the questions were all SCO related.
Well, that kind of makes sense because his thing was a bunch of analysts. And I mean, that's the type of fodder.
That's a lot of time. That's 25 minutes of a panel. focused on one thing.
Yeah, but how much time have we spent focusing on it over the past 3 months? But, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, for that sort of thing. But when it comes down to actually dealing with Linux, dealing with products and everything else, it just doesn't seem to be on people's minds.
Now, that's dangerous. That's very dangerous. You don't want to get obsessed with it, but you don't want to ignore it either.
Yeah, but I think for most of the people, and, you know, let's think of who we're talking about here. We're talking about people who are looking to deploy, they're looking to use, they want stuff for their organizations. And I think that they've come to accept, for the most part, that what's going on here is a sideshow.
Yeah.
And they'll worry about it if it gets to be more than that.
There's an interesting article that agrees with you over at the Register. It's not on our Linux show list, but I'm sure if you just go to the Register website, you'll see the article. It's actually written by a woman who lives here in Chicago. But this article agrees with you in that this woman has been interviewing enterprise-level developers, primarily in-house developers. And the reference frame of her article is only 1 in 10 of the development community are really paying any attention at all on this story.
Hey, guys.
Hi again, Doc.
I got a cordless phone this time. Hopefully this will work.
We'll see.
We'll see.
It sounds better.
Well, it should be. The problem is that we're high up in a hotel here, and we have a very strong signal from several carriers, and so they all contend, and so it pops over to Rome, and every time it hits Rome, it loses the call.
You need an IP phone.
Yeah, I need an IP phone. Well, you know, we're in a hotel suite.
Yep.
Yeah.
Anyways, we're talking about the developer debate or lack thereof on SCO, and I was relating to Russ that there's an article on the Register that agrees with his assessment that people are not talking about SCO that much on the floor of the expo because they're too busy talking about Linux and business products. And
yeah, I think it's true.
And there's an article on the Register that really does agree with that. This woman said quite an extensive study, and her reference point is that only 1 in 10 of the developers at the enterprise level to be focused on the SCO issue at all. And so that is a healthy response. But from a vendor reference, forget about, you know, doing community advocacy, okay, but from a vendor reference, 1 in 10, losing 1 in 10 enterprise clients to a competing OS is billions of dollars worth of revenue.
Mm.
Think about it.
Yeah, I'm sure, but and I mean, I don't even know what to make of those numbers. Is what she was saying that the FUD is working, essentially?
No, she was saying the FUD is not working.
It's not working, yeah.
She's saying that 90% of the development community doesn't give a damn about what SCO's doing, and they're ignoring it.
I think...
What that also means is 10% are caring.
Yeah, and that number, I think that number's high. I think 10% care for the same reason as, you know, 10% of the population cares what Britney Spears is wearing, although it has no material effect on their lives. You know, it's just, I think most people know that the SCO case is bogus and it's not going anywhere. But I mean, I've heard from a few people, and this is what Red Hat's case is, that there is, you know, the FUD is working to some degree.
That they're losing revenue.
Yeah, well, I have heard from more than one company. I mean, people have written to me. Because I mean, when I wrote something early on about SCO, and somebody wrote to me saying, I work for such and such a company, and let me tell you, you know, the legal department is suddenly taking an interest in Linux where they have never had any interest before. And suddenly there is this, you know, we have to justify Linux on legal grounds that we didn't need to justify it before. And this whole notion of indemnification, you know, that's not a term that's ever been used before.
For software.
For software. I mean, for Linux, for sure. You know, I mean, I don't even know. I'm sure it's been used in some contexts. It's just, even with proprietary software, I've not heard it very much, you know, indemnifying your customer. Oh, my God, what the hell is that supposed to mean? You know, against what? I mean, it's, you know, it's a ludicrous notion. We live in a world, and especially in a country, where anybody can sue anybody over anything because you can find some damn thing that somebody might be crazy enough to sue over. But generally, civilization gets along in spite of that. You know, just like there are pickpockets in societies, and you just kind of like, you still walk the streets because you know there are pickpockets out there. Well, there are litigious people and companies out there that live for this kind of stuff, and they're there, but life goes on.
Well, speaking of pickpockets, did you happen to read the response to Red Hat filing a complaint today?
The response from SCO?
Yeah.
Yes, it was, you know, like, you know, I thought we had an agreement on the phone or an agreement to just don't ask, don't tell, something weird like that.
Yeah, I roared with laughter over this. It really is.
Oh man. I thought when I read what Daryl McBride wrote that his whole argument was, I thought we had an agreement about how you would stop beating your wife. You know, that's how it read to me.
Yep.
That it was, you know, I thought we had an agreement about all the things you were doing wrong, and we had an understanding about that. That we were, you know, that I wasn't going to bring it up if you weren't going to bring it up. And no doubt, I mean, after reading that, I thought, you know, what choice did Zulik have, you know, if that's the kind of stuff that was going on privately?
Oh, well, that's Donald McBride for you. It really is. That's him. What I've been getting all day long is people emailing me and asking me, is McBride and the rest of SCO really serious in their anger and their bewilderment that Red Hat has countersued? And I'm of the absolute 100% opinion that I think Darryl and his crew are absolutely elated that it took this long for somebody to countersue.
Oh, probably. I don't know. I mean, they don't breathe the same air as the rest of us, I don't think. I can't imagine being excited about any of that kind of stuff. I mean, if I had a business where I thought somebody had stolen some of my intellectual property, whatever the hell that is, which is four or five things at once, I think I'd say, you know, well, let's move on, you know, let's see if we can settle this thing up or move on. And they're not doing that. I mean, they're living entirely for this thing.
I certainly would be battling it in the press like they have been doing for the last...
Oh, it's just, I mean, it's so clear that, you were saying earlier when before we were cut off that you know, when this is over and the code gets exposed, they're going to, you know, it's going to be a nothing. Well, you know, if I'm the Security and Exchange Commission, I'm going to want to know if this thing turns out to be a nothing, how much have people on the SCO side benefited from stock that they sold when the price was inflated because of all the news that they made? You know, I mean, that's why what I keep coming back to is when you sue somebody, you don't go and blab about it for, you know, every week and hold press conferences, you know, on a constant basis to announce your next offensive. I mean, it's just insane. It is not what you do in the middle of a lawsuit.
Yep.
But they
are cashing out on the stock.
And people are cashing out of the stock. I mean, it's so... I don't know, maybe I don't understand the law, and I mean, these guys are certainly, I'm sure, to a person more educated than I am about this, but I would be, you don't screw with those people, you know, I mean, and look what they're doing to Martha Stewart, I mean, for God's sakes, you know, I mean, it's, this is a, this is serious stuff. I mean, they better succeed, because if they don't, I think they're in personal trouble if they've benefited at all from selling stock, you know, during the moment that it was at its highest, because they were busy fanning the flames of FUD. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably going to end up being the case when everything's said and done. But it is remarkable that I got interviewed by somebody from Wall Street Journal about 2 weeks ago, and my only comment about the entire issue, I just told the guy, well, you're the Wall Street Journal, here's my comment, sell, go, because it's the highest it's been in 52 weeks, so that's all I need to say. And 2 days later, came out the news that they were all cashing out. So I think it's pretty obvious that somebody's been doing a little fanning, but we'll find out.
Yeah.
We are up to the break time. We're going to take a short couple of minutes to regroup, and we will come back on the other side of the break with segment number two and our guest from IBM, Dan Fry, and we're going to talk about things going on with the Linux Technology Center and some other announcements that are coming out of IBM this week at the Linux World Expo. So everybody hang in there, listen to some music, relax, go get a beer, kick back. We'll be right back.
Some people didn't reach a bar, but only enough can go. The recent ranks were all entering time. catching breath, they enter the waves. For only the drowned can be saved. The weight of their trust shall carry them swift. So deep below the end.
And we're back.
It's the Linux Show for the 5th of August, 2003. We're coming to you from both Chicago and live from Linux World Expo out on the left coast. Another exciting episode of our weekly excursion into the world of Linux and open source. And so, we're going to be having as our guest for the second half an old friend of the Linux Show, Dan Fry, who, in the opinion of several people, I was going to say many, but I would have to check my math, but in the opinion of several people, me included, I think Dan Fry is one of a handful of people that can be pointed at IBM who played an amazingly critical and crucial role during the time frame of late 90s of taking IBM as an advocacy project, personal advocacy project, and converting that company. I know, Dan, I don't want to embarrass you, and I know you had hundreds and hundreds of techno geeks within the corporation who were willing to throw their support behind you, but I think you are due an enormous amount of kudos for educating a corporation that size and being able to build up a Linux team that quickly and turning a corner with a company that historically has had this reputation of being this plodding behemoth and really doing amazing things within IBM. So I'm really glad to have you back again because I think you're a remarkable guy. So welcome to the Linux Show again.
Well, I'm glad to be here. I think you give me too much credit. I think it was the hundreds and thousands of IBM customers demanding Linux that had a bigger impact on the change. But, yeah, it was fun to play a role.
Yeah. But the exciting thing has been, I'm sure, for you that not only have you been able to play that role as advocate for the largest computer company in the world. You can argue that back and forth with Microsoft if you want, but I think you're the largest. But it's given you the enviable position of really being able to select a role within IBM that is really, really cool. And that is your present gig as the director of the Linux Technology Center. That has just got to be an incredibly fun, fulfilling job.
It is the best. It's the best job in the company. So it's good, clean fun. You don't often get to do something brand new, completely different, high impact.
Every day,
right? So, and the team loves it. You know, they work, 100%, every day, side by side in the various open source communities as peers, and they just love it. So, and they have an impact. I think we've helped make a difference in the rate of maturation of Linux.
Yep.
Well, for people who don't know what the Linux Technology Center does, how about if we ask Dan to give us a quick rundown?
Yeah, we have about 300 people in the Linux Technology Center, and our basic mission is to help make Linux better. So we got people working deep in the kernel directly with Linus and Andrew, and we've got people working with Dave Miller on networking. We have people working on security and standards and tests, and we work, from an IBM perspective, we decided a long time ago it was good business if Linux matures just as rapidly as it can, and we decided to help out. So we took some of our best programmers, taught them about Linux, and just turned them loose. And they operate as individuals, You know, the rules work for us just like they work for anybody else. You write good code, you know, over a period of time, it gets accepted, you gain influence, you make things happen, you write bad code, you just get toasted in public, and, you know, you learn not to do that again, right? So it's good, clean fun.
Yeah, and if I'm doing my math correctly, and I don't expect you to answer this question, because this is one of these corporate numbers that you don't have to fess up to, but I'm just guessing that the salaries of your crew, that you're looking at 300 people, that's got to be salaries of $20 to $25 million a year that's really being contributed to the Linux community.
Oh no, actually they will all work for free.
That is so cool. That's just salaries alone.
It is. So we're, you know, you know, a lot of people thought it was hype a few years ago when then chairman Lou Gerstner said we're going to spend $1 billion on Linux in the year 2000. But you know, our salaries do count, and those people do get paid, and they like what they're doing, but they still like to see that paycheck twice a month. And even better, we think we've had an impact.
An impact. Now, on our website is a link. I won't read the link. You can go to the website and click on it. But there is a link to the Linux Technology Center, and people can go click on it and look at the long, long, long list of contributions that IBM has been working on over the last couple of years. It's a pretty remarkable list. It is an enviable list by anyone.
Yeah, and the true story is even longer. If you think programmers are great at writing code, but getting them to actually post information on a website about what they've done is much harder than getting them to provide a kernel. You know. So it's somewhere in the range of 50 or 60% of what we've done.
Wow. That's cool. That's a remarkable list. So what is the big doing with the group for this year's expo? Are you going to be releasing a new tool? What's going to be the big thing for the Technology Center for the Linux World Expo this year?
So our announcement, you guys missed in that talking about the big things. We didn't announce a tool or a new product. We announced something completely different. We announced a stamp of approval. So we announced today that IBM and SUSE are working together for the first time. Got formal security certification for Linux. In fact, it's the first time any open source operating system has been formally certified, and this is by the common criteria classification. It's a group of 15 of the largest countries, including the United States, and we got what is known as EAL2 certification. It's a low level of certification, but it's important for a couple reasons. One, there are people in the industry who have been saying that it would be impossible to security certify an open source operating system and process, and we've proved them wrong. We also announced today that we have plans to move rapidly up the ladder of security certifications to the same level as the proprietary Unixes and Windows, and so that'll be happening over the coming months. And it's a huge enabler for Linux in governments around the world.
In the conversations that I've had with people here in talking about that particular issue, a number of people were surprised to find that Windows, in fact, is certified at the top level.
It's not at the top level. It's Windows, I think, is either EAL 4 or 5.
Mm.
It goes all the way up to 7, but that's 6 and 7 are generally for customized solutions.
Yeah.
Windows actually is certified at a reasonable level, and it's one of the things that allows them to compete in the government, and Linux is simply climbing that certification ladder now.
Does anybody ever move down the ladder?
Well, you have to certify at different levels. You can come off by not keeping your certification current.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the other interesting thing about the certification is we didn't have to change a thing. It's not as if we, you know, it might be more interesting to tell a story of heroic effort by programmers, you know, having to change Linux and, you know, change the design, and there was none of that. We just had to write down how it worked, and, you know, execute the test cases, and it's certified. It was complete and utter myth that you can't certify an open source software product.
Mm-hmm.
One of the listeners would like to know if that was the stock SUSE kernel or has some special IBM VM widget been added.
Stock. We did it start to finish in 7 months. We didn't change a thing. We just, you know, we wrote the test cases, wrote the documentation, you know, documented the design, submitted it, and they stamped it approved. And so, in fact, my lead architect's got walking around with a T-shirt. It's got an imprint of the certification on his back. So, it's stock. It wouldn't be very interesting if it wasn't. But we couldn't have done it this quickly. And so we also announced that we'll have the next level EAL3 by the end of the year across all of our products, all of our server products.
So. EAL3 by the end of the year.
Yep.
When will you get to the level 4?
EAL4, I'm guessing 18 months. It becomes a little more difficult. There is in fact some security functionality that will need to be added. But the thing, we are very confident. This is just arms, legs, and elbow grease. There's nothing magical or nothing we will have to undo or change because it's open source. So we're quite excited about it. And talking to people worldwide in governments, they've been delighted. They've been looking for this. What it will do, even if programs need EAL3 or 4 long term in order, you know, to buy, they can buy with EAL2 and a solid roadmap. But they did need us to prove it that we could do it instead of just state that we were going to do it.
Wow. That's very impressive. That really is. That's very impressive.
Yeah, I think it's one of those fundamental building blocks that any operating system needs to be considered, you know, mission critical, especially in the public sector. And financial institutions and insurance and banking and a number of different segments, although they don't formally require certification, they do look, you know, to the government certification programmers as guiding them as to what, you know, what operating systems and what systems they can use. So this really removes one of the remaining fundamental barriers to Linux being, you know, widely adopted everywhere.
Has there been any plans to look at the SE Linux enhancements on whether that would fit into these scenarios at all?
Well, so what SE Linux, for those of you, your show is probably aware of what the NSA did a while back. And what that really affected, that affected fundamental design for the next version of kernel 2.6. So the Linux security architecture in 2.6, you know, enables policies to be plugged in. One of the policies that's being written to be plugged into 2.6 is an SE Linux. The architectural, that's kind of a heavyweight protocol. But there are other protocols being written as well. But so SE Linux will be, you will be able to use that level of security protocol when 2.6 comes out as a standard plugin.
That is quite cool.
Wow. I'm amazed.
Yeah, this is a big deal. There's a lot of big press and. It was also remarkable talking to people throughout the government. They were looking forward to this. They were urging us on. They wanted, you know, not that Linux is going to be the only operating system in the universe, but they wanted the choice. They wanted, you know, to be able to choose Linux when it makes sense. And many of the government agencies need, you know, the formal certification to be able to make that choice.
Wow. So any other big news? As if this isn't big enough. But
no, that's the biggest. You talked about some of the other things. Certainly the Opteron super based, Linux-based Opteron supercomputing cluster. You know, you guys implied somebody would pass us. Of course, that wouldn't be possible. So that was big news, and my team got to help on that as well. And
just in general, don't you think it's very exciting, though, that in the last week there's been four major Linux on supercomputer stories?
Yeah, and it's, you know, so what has happened, once again, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Linux on, you know, clusters, as a, you know, loosely connected clusters in, say, the petro industry and the lower end of the high-performance computing industry, Linux has, you know, kind of taken over. What this represents is that next level of much more tightly, you know, tightly connected clusters doing more mission-critical work. So I'm you know, an ex-supercomputing jock as well. And, yeah, this is cool. So this is, you know, kind of like old home week.
Yeah.
So the last thing I'll mention, just in terms of, now this is pure speculation. I can't prove this at all, and so it'd be interesting if somebody out there could. But, you know, blades, I believe the majority of blades across the industry are being sold with Linux. I mean, you know, everything else combined, it's less than Linux. I think that's true in IBM, and I think that's true across the industry as well. It's just, it's the Linux alone is disruptive, but Linux and blades, I mean, this is a fundamental change in the way, you know, IT is being done.
That's quite true, because, you know, I mean, this is an operating system that really knows how to leverage that hardware. And the other side of the coin, quite frankly, is that, you know, if you have to keep adding incremental costs on your operating systems for every blade that you're adding to the system, Linux just fits so well. I mean, the whole model just fits so well, hand in glove.
Yeah, well, I know the guys who own the company Rackspace. And they were telling me, they're bouncing emails things for us, but they were telling me that blade-based server clusters are going to completely change their business model. They're going to be able to offer a dedicated server to their clients at a fraction of what they're presently
offering. That's interesting, because both those guys are here at this party hiding from in a closet right now. They're in the next room.
We'll go nail them when the show's over, Doc.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, no, I agree with you, Dan. I think Blades is a big story for 2003, 2000. Definitely the comer.
Oh, Jeff, I don't know if you noticed, too, when you were counting your supercomputing stuff, I happened to see that Dell is pushing an NCSA.
Dell, dude. I don't count them.
But the thing is, it's another PR thing. Same sort of tone to it.
Yeah.
So
Dell will build the first supercomputer for $699.
I have to report that Dell has the thinnest press kit at the show.
That's just an
interesting point.
The what?
The thinnest press kit in the media room. I was kind of surprised. This is not a bad thing. It's just sort of an interesting thing. You know? I think Sun has the thickest kit.
They have lots of old literature to get rid of.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is that the Dell press kit is smaller than the press kit that came out for Eric Raymond's The Art of Unix Programming.
And, oh, my God, really?
You think that the press kit for a book wouldn't be that thick, but it is.
Hey, we're talking about Eric, though. why say in 10 words what you could say in 1,000?
And hold people's attention in the process.
Yeah.
Which is the wild part. He's really good at that.
So anything else, Dan?
No, that's about it. There's one other thing somebody said earlier that I disagree with. I think it was Russell said didn't think the show was, you know, that crowded tonight. I will tell you that one day every show IBM has customer day, so we have customer day tomorrow. We're completely full. Every seat is filled. We got 700 customers. We turned them away, and so, you know, business is good. is, you know, we're having fun making money. I don't know how you can be, you know, how you can do better than that.
Now, what's your overall impression of the show thus far from the stuff that you've seen? I mean, how does it compare in your mind to time span?
So the show continues to evolve. It's becoming, you know, it's less technical, it's more business. You know, there's the booths, people, the traffic. So there's still a mixture. It's still a mixture of geek and suit, but it's tilting more towards the suits, right? You know, the hardcore geeks, you know, are all at Ottawa. But they're still, but you know, the customers, the seriousness of the customers continues to increase. And spent a lot of time with customers, you know, on the floor today, and most of them, you know, one difference from 2 years ago. 2 years ago, beginning to get serious customers, and they were looking. Now they've all got deployments. Some of them are test deployments. Some of them are mission critical, and the question, and they're talking about what their next deployment is.
So, Dan, I have a question you may not be in a position to answer. So when are we going to see a desktop and a laptop? I want to see a ThinkPad that I can buy off the shelf with Linux on it, that IBM promotes on its web page.
Well, when there is enough business for it. I think the Novell Zimian acquisition this week gave you clear indications that the desktop, you know, is finally maturing. You look at the City of Munich deal. I'm talking with customers regularly. We now are talking with customers about large desktop deployments. You know, if you guys remember when I was on the show a couple years ago, I said we were waiting and we were looking. It's pretty clear that this year the desktop has begun to emerge significantly. The laptop, we're just going to have to see. There still is not that big a demand for, you know, off-the-shelf. That may be next year's story. This year's story is clearly that the desktop is maturing as a viable solution.
Mm. So we can see a desktop.
Yeah, but it's not. And it's desktop, you know, from an IBM parlance, it's not for the highly technical. But when you begin to see large deployments, customers who aren't as technical as the average, high-end Linux user, then so that's real business, and that's clearly what we're seeing. Our services business is doing, you know, a lot of engagements around the desktop. So it is finally arriving.
That's great.
Now, at the Linux Technology Center, I want to get this in before we completely run out of time. There are a remarkable number of non-IBM people who will collaborate with you on your various projects. And how do people find out about information on how to collaborate with you at either the LTC website or what you've got out at SourceForge? What is the path someone would mostly?
Well, you can go to the IBM website and you can find us, and then, you know, each of the various projects have a link. But, you know, typically we don't think of them as collaborating with us. In most cases, we are simply part of the greater community. So if you're going to collaborate, you know, on core kernel stuff, you can go to the kernel mailing list and pick a various area, and you will undoubtedly run into one or more LTCers, you know, working on those various things. There are some things for which we are the leader. You know, some of the individual projects, some of the more interesting corners of the universe, like maybe the Linux test project or some of the other things that is a little bit different. You can get at us from, and the rules for participating in an LTC-led project or a project that we're in are just like everything else. You lurk, you learn, you jump in, and start doing things.
Okay. But, I think it would be a great opportunity for somebody to rub elbows with what has become one of the two leading companies with the universe. It's just been remarkable. I think if not every week, every other week, we're constantly saying the same thing. I just don't believe it. IBM's done it again. Just a remarkable roadmap that you folks have laid out of not only, I've said this at our website today, IBM has not only talked the talk, but you have delivered, you have walked the walk as being a truly excellent community member. And it just amazes me that a company the size of IBM can get it so well. So real kudos to the whole company.
Well, I appreciate that. And you know what? It was remarkably easy. It was not a divisive debate. From the senior executives on down, we started having a conversation in 98, and it was, well, duh. You know, the path that, you know, for us, it was the internet all over again. You know, we learned from it. But I appreciate the good words.
Yeah. Okay. Well, Dan, I'd like to thank you once again for coming on the show tonight. You're always an interesting guest to have on.
Happy to be on, and we'll see you again.
Okay. Well, thanks. And it is up to the time. It's 10 minutes after the hour, so we're a little bit behind 9 o'clock shut-off time. Yeah, got a couple of very, very brief announcements to make. I am going to be on vacation this next week. I am not sure if there's going to even be a show next week. Guys, are you going to have a show next week?
I don't have a guest lined up at the moment.
Okay. Well, there's a good possibility that there may be no Linux show next week because I will be driving to go pick up my wife. She's in Poland, and I got to go pick her up in Pittsburgh. How that's happened, I don't know. But
hello?
Yeah, we're here. We're here, Rose.
Yeah. But I imagine U.S. Air is involved.
I don't know. It's something of saving people a lot of money, so Jeff ended up being the driver to Pittsburgh. God, I don't know how this happened to me. But anyways, that's my vacation this year. How wonderful. But I really am not sure. At this point, I think you can presume that the next Linux show you're going to be seeing is going to be in 2 weeks, the 19th of August, so we'll probably be off next week. But go ahead and check the website. Make sure, just in case something pops up. Or you can spend next week going through our archive of some of our old shows. We'll try and have Kevin queue up a couple of the better shows so that the content of the show is listed, so you don't have to guess at it. But if not, we will definitely see you on the 19th of August. In the meantime, please go to our website, www.linuxshow.com. And if you've got the financial wherewithal, click on the PayPal link and become a sponsor to the Linux Show. We operate the show as if it was a non-for-profit. We're technically not a non-for-profit corporation because most of the bills are paid for by a small ISP that Kevin and I operate here in Chicago. But we operate it as a cash flow negative nonprofit as it were. And so we survive based upon the goodwill of Linux vendors and members of the Linux community supporting us on a week-by-week basis. And so far, it has worked since 1998. We'll keep on going that way as long as we can possibly afford to do it. So we do appreciate your support, and we do appreciate you coming by every week to check out Linux Show, and make sure when you have had a chance to digest everything we've talked about here tonight that you contact 10 friends, tell them about the Linux Show, or if you are involved with a Linux user group, make sure that your Linux user group meets next time on a Tuesday night, and you can all hang out and listen to the Linux Show together and have a beer for us. So until next time, the 19th of August, this has been The Linux Show for Tuesday, August the 5th, 2003. We'll see everybody in 2 weeks. We are out of here.